Hello and welcome to the Navy Blue Corner. I'm Ian, joined as always by my good mate Lockie, and the Blues are back this week after a nice little break, I guess, to recharge and reset after a big start to the season. We are 2-0, looking to make it 3 as we face North Melbourne in a Good Friday clash. Lockie, how did you find the week off?
Didn't love it, to be honest, for myself. I'm hoping really? The boys are feeling rejuvenated, but yeah, no, we were hyped up, the season's into full gear, and then I had to watch, a bunch of other games that didn't involve us, so I'm raring to get back into it.
Yeah, it was definitely a strange one to have a bye so early. It was hard to watch a lot of footy on TV. If I wasn't doing like Supercoach and Fantasy, I don't think I would have watched anything at all, because I just, where's Carlton? What's going on? I don't like this. Weirdly, I didn't mind a bit of a break. I think it's strange how much you forget like the mental toll of following football takes on you every single week. So I didn't mind just a little bit of a soother, a little bit of a week off. But I'll tell you what, I am itching to get back into it and very keen to talk about everything. So let's kick off with our favorite segment, the one we start every single episode with, and that is Navy Noise, where we talk about all the big news stories, everything that is breaking right now. And honestly, it's been a very quiet week. There is not a lot to chat about. So I tried to come up with a few, I think, really good talking points about the bye, about the week off. The big question that I've come up with is, do you think that the start of the season, having played two games before most of the clubs and then getting a week off, do you think that that's given us an advantage on the season, or is it, I guess, a bit of a disadvantage sort of having that break straight away?
It's going to be challenging to reflect on this. Like, I feel like the way that the teams, that did opening round, how they perform across the season, I guess that'll kind of dictate how we look back on it. I think there's teams that did opening round that have a bye in round 5, I believe.
Yeah.
If I could have my way, that maybe feels a little better. A bit, a few more games at the start, so the breaks are a bit different length. It's hard for me to have a strong opinion on this one. Like I said, I think I'd take round 5 if I could have my way, but we're just going to have to see how it plays out. What do you think? Is there another way that you would have preferred things to go if you were the fixture maker for us?
It's such a strange one. I don't know if there's probably after we get the evidence, it'll be way easier to answer that question. I think I haven't even really thought of it that way. I've more been trying to go around what has happened and I guess just reacting to that. And it's kind of worked out, I think, the two games quite well for us, obviously because the Brisbane game and the Richmond game, we were fighting till that very last second. They were massive, massive games of football for us. It would have taken a lot physically and mentally out of the boys. So getting that week off straight after helps. But I think my worry, if you start to push it out, and maybe this works really well because of what transpired, we got the wins, went 2-0. That's great. You've got, I guess, positivity running through the club. But we weren't necessarily off and flying. We weren't playing perfect football. It wasn't like we've maybe played 5 or 6 games and we're absolutely peaking. I think it kind of works well that we got some wins, but there's still plenty to work on. Whereas I do worry if we maybe had that in round 5, that if we started to get heaps of momentum and that stopped immediately, just what that means for you. So I don't know, maybe it's allowed us to have a couple of free hits early and then almost start the season from now on such a positive ledger.
Yeah, I can definitely see that point of view. It is going to be fascinating to see if we do see a noticeable difference in us over these next few weeks. I know historically, well, from my kind of gut feel, is teams don't tend to perform super well after a bye, especially last year. I know we got a win after the bye, which was good. But, if we go down on Friday, for example, I feel like a lot of people are going to point to the bye. Like, that's just going to be the obvious place to look. So we'll see.
Yeah. So I guess off that, how do you ensure that we aren't sluggish, that we are able to bounce back strongly after the bye? It's always that big question. And it's difficult, I think, when you look at Carlton in isolation. I'm pretty sure last year was like the first time we'd actually won off the back of a bye. But I don't know if you can just say it's because of the break, because we have been absolutely horrific for many, many years, the list and everything. So I don't know if you can just say the break was the cause of that. But I think historically, once you do take the foot off the pedal, you have a week off, it is harder to jump in as you were. So how are you trying to minimize that sort of sluggish start?
You're not wrong. We were losing before the buys, after the buys,
after the buy,
during the buys.
During the buy.
All the things. Exactly. I don't have an answer to this question. I'm going to say that I would not be surprised if we do get jumped in this game. North, in their first two games, were definitely a lot stronger in the first halves and were kind of competitive in the first half of each of their games and then got overrun at the end. That kind of feels... That's kind of, if I'm trying to foresee Friday, that feels kind of right. I don't know. What do you have in mind?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're spot on with, I guess, your analysis of North. Young team, super hungry. This is going to be a massive game for them again, like the Good Friday time. Clash. And knowing that we're a better team in the AFL now, we're gunning for that top four and premiership contention, going quite deep into a prelim last season. We're a lot more of that team that, we're no longer the hunters. We're the team that those bottom few are going to come out even stronger against because it's such a big scalp. And I agree with you. I think them being that little bit younger, they do tend to fade off as games progress. So that sort of start of the game is really vital for them. But I don't know. I'm not sure I have the direct answer to how we make sure we aren't sluggish. But I guess I'm just backing in the mentality of these boys because they've been able to do it on the biggest stages in finals last year, and they know what that mentality needs to be. And if there's anything that shows you you can't be sluggish to start a game, it's the Brisbane one for me, which they had literally, what, 2-3 weeks ago, which you don't turn up in the first half, good luck. And luckily, somehow we managed to turn it around, but you just can't be doing that every single week. So maybe that was the reality check we needed heading into this, that you've got to be 100%. You have to have that mentality, bring the pressure, be there at the contest, and things will go your way. So I'm way too confident, I think, is how I would say it, about how I believe we will come out in that first quarter.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still recovering from my burns from a couple of weeks ago, like, you know, feeling like we're going to just dominate every quarter against Richmond. So maybe that was a bit of a reality check. But no, I'm with you. I'm still confident in all those regards. And the pressure thing, we've talked about it already in previous episodes. Like, I don't understand what it is to be able to flick that switch from the start, whether it's just the coaches really emphasizing that as like the key priority, like this above everything, because it feels like when we do have that above everything, we don't lose.
Yeah. So. No, I'm very excited to see how we go straight from the bounce. And if you're watching this on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel, let us know how you think we can stop the sluggish start if it does happen. How can we make sure that we come out of the gates absolutely firing? Drop it in the comments below. And if you're listening in podcast form, wherever you listen to your podcast, head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Links will be in the show notes in the description to make it super, super easy for you. But keen to read all your comments as you follow along. And Lockie, at time of recording, there has been some final news that's actually breaking through the Twitter spheres, through everywhere, because trying to get some content for this episode, I was on the Carlton website and all I got was like one interview about obviously the massive Good Friday clash with Mitch McGovern, but we've been radio silent apart from that until now. Big injury report has just dropped. In that, Wietering, Marchbank and Motlop are all available for selection this week, while Walsh is eyeing a return in about 2 to 3 weeks. And unfortunately, the other main one is Jack Martin, who has sustained another injury yet again, a low-grade hamstring strain. Could be a few more weeks away. No real timeline on that. They just say he's not available this week, so maybe he could be ready to go the week after. I guess, what are your thoughts on the injury news, especially around Walsh and his timeline, as we will be discussing the few that will be available for selection later in our Blueprint to Victory segment?
Yeah, I feel like this is the definition of a mixed bag of reports for me. Like, it's amazing that we're going to be able to get Wietering back. Like, it's obvious what a massive difference he'll make to the lineup. And I guess see the Walsh news as positive. I don't know about you, but I feel like the rumor mill was running pretty wild with like, he's never going to play again. You know, he's not going to play again this season, things like that. So he's
going in for surgery, really, all those whispers.
Exactly. The Martin one is disappointing to me because with these guys, I think, like, we've seen that the role that he plays is pretty pivotal to our structure. So as I was thinking about who we're going to be lining up with this week, you know, before we heard this news, I was like, gee, I hope that he is going to be right to come in because he's so important. But as I said, we're just, you can't ever assume that he's going to be fit. There just seems to be always something, which is a big shame.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixed bag. I would agree. I think it's mainly positive from my perspective. The Walsh news was pretty expected. I was never thinking he would be available for the North game. My rough thoughts, knowing absolutely nothing really about his injury, was maybe, I think we play Adelaide in Melbourne after Gather Round. And I thought that's a good one. Doesn't travel, stays in Melbourne. That would roughly be my timeline, rather than having to go over to Adelaide and play there as your first game. It just feels like a risk you don't need to take. And I guess the timeline kind of works all right with that in the 2 to 3 weeks. So it's nice to get a little bit more, I guess, clarity on the timeline, considering the negative rumors that were always twirling. But yeah, to have Wiedering, Marchbank and Motlop back, they're the big ones. Just having guys fit and ready to go for selection. That we've clearly missed Wiedering down back. Marchbank is another you can throw into that if Wiedering wasn't there, you would have hoped that Marchbank would have been available. And then Motlop, that sort of small forward cohort, hasn't set the world on fire to start the season. So I'm happy to kind of see Motlop come back in, and I'll hopefully be just a little bit of another level on top of what we have seen, at least have some competition for spots, which will be nice. And I guess to touch on the Martin injury, I'm not as disappointed because I thought he'd probably be a week or so away and maybe even need some time in the VFL. Just with his body, I feel like he's that guy that needs a bit of match sharpness before you bring him in. But I agree in the structure sense, he's really that guy we don't have a suitable replacement for in that role, whereas at least with Wiedering, you have a Lewis Young who is that position. You've got other midfielders, you've got other small forwards, but gee, Jack Martin is that medium-sized tall. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure we'll get into Marchbank and Motlop in the Blueprint to Victory, because I feel like we may have some conflicting opinions on them, which will be good for a change.
Yes, we need that. Absolutely. And hopefully we have some conflicting opinions in this one. We're bringing back the Under the Radar segment where we kind of try to bring a few things that maybe aren't spoken about as much that we believe need a bit of a spotlight shone on them. And this is probably a good time to introduce a bit of a part of this segment that we wanted to talk about throughout the season, which is a bit of a reflection time. We love that on this podcast. And
big time.
I basically want to get from you one player that you think has underperformed so far to start this season and needs a bit of a lift. And obviously the more positive side of this, a player who's probably overperformed that deserves a bit of praise that they maybe haven't received so far. So a double-edged sword in this one. And I want to hear from the listeners as well. Drop it in the comments on YouTube and head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Let us know who's underperformed. How do you think they're going to turn it around? And who has overperformed that you maybe didn't expect to get that performance out of?
100%. So for me, I don't feel like I have a groundbreaking one for underperforming. And this definitely doesn't, you know, change my opinion on this guy long term. But I think it's fair to say that Ollie Hollands hasn't been as good as we would have expected. I was looking through the guys that have played this season and tried to find more of a hotter take with underperforming. But I just couldn't really look past him because, and it shouldn't be super unexpected either. Like, pretty classic, you know, kind of situation, I feel like, for a first year guy to really impress and then the expectations grow for season two. And yeah, he just hasn't hit that yet. So I wouldn't mind the idea of him not being best 22 at stages throughout this season. Just with the sheer number of guys looking to break into this team. I feel like I kind of expected that he would own that wing position.
Yeah.
And now I'm a bit more like, I definitely see that as his future, but I'm not sure whether he's just a walk-up selection every week with what we've got in the first couple of weeks.
It's definitely an interesting, I guess, thing. He definitely hasn't been at that form that we saw last season. I do wonder if the injury to Doherty has at all played a role in us not getting the best out of him, just because maybe the wing rotation isn't as much as before. So maybe he's having to run a lot more and work a lot more, be a bit more of an important cog in the play. It's a tough one. The wing role is quite difficult. I haven't watched the games back and I guess tried to focus on this area. It's more just something I'm throwing out there to devil's advocate.
Yep,
I wonder if the ball just hasn't been on his side of the wing as much, and so he's been not able to affect the game going forward as much as we saw last season, whether that plays a role at all. But I do agree, we kind of have high expectations for him based off his season one. First two games hasn't been at that. We both believe he's going to get there, but it kind of, knowing we've got a few guys that can play on the wing, can rotate through there, we've got a bit of depth now, does make his position in the 22 not as, I guess, firm as you probably would have said at the start of the season. It's like you play pretty much every single game unless your body dictates otherwise. Whereas now, okay, if someone else is performing in the twos or showing that they can play that role and you're just not at the level that we really, really want, then you may need to get your form back and then come back when you've got that confidence as well.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like a similar situation to where we were with Motlop like a year ago, where we just kind of expected the progression to be linear. And yeah, it just is so rarely the case. So I'm very prepared to be wrong. And in a month, we're like, oh my God, how good is Holland's playing? But, you know, to start the season, I think he's probably the biggest underperformer for mine. Mm. Who have you got? Mm.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say that, you know, this segment isn't us just trying to absolutely shit can a bloke and say
not in the trash. Slightest.
This is more of a bit of a rev up. It's okay, let's take stock. Let's look at who's maybe not playing as well and try to get them to kick on and get them where we want them to be. So we definitely hope Ollie Hollins is up and about. Mine is probably a popular choice, maybe not as under the radar, but I think the glaring one for me to start the season is Adam Chera. Really, given Sam Walsh's absence in the midfield, we really needed everyone else to sort of stand up and maybe hit this guy's going to be your overperformed in a Jack Carroll. He's definitely taken the mantle and played some incredible football. Chera is really the one who last season, when there were some absentees, he stepped up and really took his game to another level that we maybe haven't even seen at AFL level. Was hoping he'd take that next step or at least stay at that level. Hasn't so far. Looked a little better as the game went on against Richmond compared to the others. But yeah, with Walsh a few weeks away, I think we just really need the most out of him, and that's probably going to also boost the clearance work, the stoppages that has probably also been down to start the season also.
Yep. No, I'm in agreement with you. He was on my short list. I think like the ball use, like the decision-making with ball in hand is something that's been obvious to me in the first couple of weeks where I felt like there's been quite a few times where he, I don't know, hasn't taken the best option. And that's what we need from the guys that are coming through the midfield with ball in hand. We need them to be making the best decision more times than not. So good rev up.
Yeah. We know he's better. And hopefully these guys can go that step further this week against North and make us look like idiots for even bringing them up. But let's go positive. Who's the player that's overperformed for you that you reckon deserves a bit of praise on the pod?
I feel like we've praised a few of these guys. So I'm going to pick maybe a bit of a niche one because I gave him a rev up in the preseason. So I'm going to say George Hewitt for me.
Yeah, I like
because,
that.
Like, I don't think he's necessarily, I don't know, outperforms the general consensus view on him. I just felt in the preseason a little more down on him than most, maybe, and that maybe he was a bit more of a kind of fringe guy in this midfield where I'm like, I don't know, I could see a situation where maybe he isn't locked into that midfield. But after the first two games, I felt like he really stepped up as a leader. And, you know, like you said, with Chera down a bit and, you know, us trying a few different things, like Carroll being in there, I feel like Hewitt's really stood up and I'm feeling really confident about him for the rest of the season now.
Yeah, I agree on that one. He's been really, really good. I know you spoke about in the preseason that he was under the pump a little bit in the sense of what can maybe other guys also bring to that midfield. Is he still competing with Kennedy for that role? And last year, Kennedy was on top for a little bit. Then Hewitt ends up taking that mantelpiece just to see how the midfield mix would develop. I think Hewitt's been great for us. Stood up when we needed him to in the absence of a Walsh. And hoping for more of that. Mine is maybe a little bit similar. I reckon yours is definitely a little bit more under the radar. But my guy, he's so good and he probably hasn't overperformed, but I feel like we just don't talk about him enough for what he does every single week. And that's Adam Saad. He's always we all love him, but I don't think we praise him as much every single week. I thought in the first game against Brisbane, his great battle with Charlie Cameron, he absolutely, even though Charlie Cameron kicks a couple of goals, I thought he was absolutely excellent and stopped a fair few more. And then I thought last week against Richmond, super pivotal in our rebounding game, helping that transition, which was such a big source for us because we couldn't win it at the coalface. Our clearance game and scores from that were really down, whereas turnover transition were up. And I think he plays a massive role in that. And on top of that, to do it while fasting during Ramadan, it's just I don't, I'll never understand how he's capable of doing that. Not being able to eat, not being able to have any water all day. I don't know how you can function, let alone play a game of AFL to the standard that he does. He's just superhuman.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like he should be the face of the under the radar segment because he does very rarely get the love for what he does, like in terms of consistency. I'm not sure whether there is someone in the team that is more consistently good than him.
Yeah, he's a star. I love it. So let's jump into the big thing everyone wants to talk about. It is our big clash, Good Friday, against North Melbourne. It's the blueprint to victory. We'll start where we always do, which is with the question, Lockie. What do you want to see from this game? It's obviously the win. That's not what we're after. I want something a bit more in-depth. And let us know again. I'm going to say it every single time I mention this during the episode. If you're on Blue Abroad, what do you want to see? Put it in the comments right now. I want everyone watching to put it in there and I'll be reading them all and replying to them all. And also, if you're listening in podcast form, when safe to do so, head over to the socials and let us know what you want to see from this game. But Lockie, what do you want to see?
I'm going to pull a classic navy blue corner move. I'm not sure if you know what I'm going to say.
This isn't a fence sit, surely, somehow.
Hey, we're not fence sitters. No. It's when you're
running it back.
You nailed it
every time.
If you don't see what you wanted to see, run it back again. Because last week, a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to see four quarter winning every quarter, and it just felt like such an opportunity against Richmond on the Thursday night to really stamp ourselves as contenders. Like the Brisbane game, you know, I feel like we probably didn't put the full stamp on it to everyone because it was like, it was just kind of like a half of footy. So it was like, this is our chance to put that stamp on. And we didn't take it. But we had reasons for that, the hard game against Brisbane, the travel and all that. No excuses this week. Yeah. I don't want the bye to be an excuse. I want people saying on Friday night, wow, Carlton are a genuine contender. They just absolutely put that team to the sword. That's what I need to say.
I love that because last season was really the first time in a few of these games against lower, I guess, ladder positioned teams, we finally, I guess, put the foot down to an extent. Hasn't been something we've been able to consistently do like the good sides. And that's really, we've spoken about consistency and what that means, and this is a big part of it in what those top four premiership contending sides do, and that's when we play the bottom four teams, we absolutely make it an easy win, and that's separation that we haven't been able to do. So I agree, I like that, and that was the narrative out of that Richmond game. Carlton weren't super impressive, but I guess they're undefeated, whatever. We're still not going to get a ridiculous amount of praise if you beat North Melbourne. But if you're able to do it in a fashion where it was just consistent, where we're in front the whole time, go on and win by a decent margin and outplay them really in every facet of the game, you kind of go, yeah, shit, they are good. And maybe we don't even need to go out of second or third gear because our best is that step higher. That would also be a really cool thing to see. But no, I absolutely love that one. I'll try and pick one of mine that can maybe match it to a degree. And speaking of running it back, I almost want to run back what we said last year. And the big one in this clash last year was, gee, North Melbourne do not have any key defenders. They had a fair few injuries last season. I'd say they're, without, I guess, cursing anything, jinxing something, I'd say their key defenders this year are almost worse quality-wise. So I really want to see us absolutely exploit their poorer key position talents down back. I want Charlie. I want Harry, whether TDK goes down there for a little bit. I want our big boys to dominate and have an absolute field day. That's one of the areas we need to do it. Feels like when we get that little advantage in an area of the ground, we don't take it to the maximum. So that's what I want to see this week.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. I don't want to hear about a brave North Melbourne defending. No, we're better. Let's prove it.
Oh, God. So I'm kind of skipping forward, I guess, but would you consider then this an opportunity to play two rucks? An opportunity to put TDK forward. Is that what you're thinking?
That, that is a spoiler for what's coming up. Yes, I've toiled with that all week, and I've got Pitto coming in for that sense. He's not going to come in every single week. And I just, De Koning, I don't think he's been amazing the first two games. He stood up in some key moments when we needed him, particularly the last quarter last week. I've liked Harry in the ruck. Yes, we probably miss out on another position if we're playing the two rucks. However, trying to really exploit an area and giving TDK a bit of a chop out, I kind of like it. And I think North's maybe a team you can do it with. I think Cherry's been phenomenal for North to start the season. He's been one of their better players.
Yep.
Maybe it's not the perfect week in the sense of we've just coming off the bye. So De Koning's nice and fresh. He doesn't need to necessarily be rested. But if I'm looking at what we can do up forward, because Jack Martin's not there, and I'm not sure Kennedy's played that medium third tall perfectly, getting De Koning down there, getting a bit more confidence on him in front of goal, I don't mind it. Why not make our strength even better? And potentially you throw Pitt in the midfield. Does that also help the stoppage clearance work? Potentially. I want to see it so I can make that judgment is where I'm seeing things right now.
You're talking me into it. You're talking me into it for sure. I think while I definitely view like the TDK, I guess TDK and Harry combo as the one that I would be wanting if we were playing in a final. I guess it would be sensible for us not to just burn TDK out as the number one guy all season and take these opportunities. Like we wanted in the preseason, in the Pracky game when they were starting Pitt, and it was like, is this what they're thinking? And in hindsight, it was probably a bit more of, it's not what they were thinking, but let's not ruin TDK. So, I don't mind your perspective on that.
And I think, again, going a little bit forward in the team selection, I do really like North's midfield. They do have some bigger bodies in that area. So I wonder if the addition of Pitt does help, because we know how much the Carlton players and midfield in particular have spoken about what Pitt does with his blocking around the ball and helping the midfielders get those clearances and I guess helping them not having to do as much work with him laying those little shepherds and blocks. So I don't know, does that also tip things in his favor? Maybe this isn't the right week. Maybe it is. But, yeah, that's my selection because, I want those big forwards firing. Do you have any other big things that you're looking to see from this game against North?
Oh, wow. Not that come to mind. I'll see when I get to the rev up.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think my only other one, which really doesn't need a lot going into it, is just I want to see those maybe underperformers that we've spoken about.
Yeah.
Chera, Hollins. I'll even throw the small forwards and maybe even Matty Cottrell to an extent in there.
Yep.
Guys that we've seen them play a lot better football last season. I don't want to have that conversation next week. I just want this to be a great performance. Everyone steps up and we go, gee, everyone's in form. How good? So that's really my last one.
I like it.
But you did mention, before we get into team selection, a really good point earlier in the episode around your perspective going into that Richmond game and from a fan perspective and the confidence in we're just going to come into this game, win every single quarter, put down a marker for the rest of the competition and prove we are that contender. We all kind of did that last game, ended up being really close. Should we remain confident as a fan base? And how do you kind of balance that being confident and not getting super cocky and expecting us to perform every week?
Yeah, I definitely think we should be remaining confident. Like, I tend to check myself on things like that with like the consensus of the rest of the Carlton community and then also just the footy community in general. Like, I think it'd be fair to say that most people would have thought that, you know, we were going to give Richmond a bit of a bath. My Richmond friends thought that we were going to give them a bath. You know, it just kind of seemed like a bit of a consensus. So I think that's the main thing, just kind of like checking the feel of the rest of the people. But yeah, I don't know. It's a difficult question to answer because, like you said, there was times last year where we finally showed that we could put the poor teams to the sword. So before then, it was kind of maybe a bit harder to believe, like in the first little bit of last season, like the game against North, for example, where we were pretty meh, if I remember correctly, and that was a big opportunity to be really good. But now we've got the runs on the board, I feel, so we can be more confident that, hey, we've seen ourselves do it, so we can.
It's such a tough question to answer, but it was one I thought was really interesting to chuck out there. I pretty much agree with a lot of what you've said, which is very on brand for the podcast. I am still going in really confident because I just think we're better. And we've often mentioned this about Carlton, that rarely have we been able to kind of go into games, and whether it happens or not, who knows? Anything can happen. You can lose to anyone any single week, but rarely have we ever gone into a game and thought, yep, we're the better team. We'll win this. I'm confident. So to have that now against these teams, and it's not disrespecting the opposition, because there's things about North Melbourne that are really good. Nick Larkey, really good forward. They've got nice pieces in their midfield. They're going to be hungry. Guys like Zach Fisher are going to be hungry to prove something against us. If we don't come out firing, if we don't play our best football, then yeah, you can easily lose any game. But I believe in our best because we've proven it. And so that's where I think it becomes, I guess, not cocky and arrogant in that sense, because it's more just a belief in I believe our best is better rather than me trashing the opposition. I'm able to see what they're able to bring rather than just completely dismissing them. My kind of follow-up I have on just this mentality piece for us fans, we're kind of new to us being confident going into these games. Do you feel like it affects the live crowd at all? There's been a bit of a discussion off the last game against Richmond where all of us kind of felt as if we were just going to run over Richmond and beat them quite comprehensively. When things weren't going our way, there was a bit of frustration and maybe we were a bit silent. We're just expecting things to happen and we weren't sort of revving up the boys, showing our full voice at all times. Do you think that mentality of just getting annoyed when it's not going your way because you expect it is a bad thing for us? And how can we make sure that we are that team that even if we believe we're going to win and it's not going our way, we still bring the noise to rev them up rather than just expecting it to happen?
That is genuinely, I think, one of the toughest questions you've asked on this podcast. Like, I'm trying to take myself back to my seat on Thursday night. And I feel like I didn't genuinely notice a difference with this. I feel like I always feel the, you know, the groans when things aren't going right and when the other team is getting on top, us shrinking. Like, that's been a narrative that we've called out ever since we started the podcast of like, can we, even when things aren't going well, can we show that we're behind them? I mean, yeah, what do you think? Like, do you feel yourself being different at a game like this?
I don't know if I do. I definitely noticed, and maybe this is, again, me going ridiculously full Nuffy like I definitely did at the footy when it happened. And it's one of those things where, because you obviously live in your own bubble of just your thoughts, you can kind of get annoyed when people aren't thinking exactly the same as you. And maybe that's just this in this moment, but it might have been the third quarter, might have been the last quarter. I'm not exactly sure, but Richmond had just kicked a goal and it felt like a moment where, I don't know, when I was watching it, like, oh, just, we just got to get up and about now. We need to egg our boys on and G us up because, gee, Richmond, they've just kicked in front and they need us right now. And so I was, you know, I heard that, you know, Nick Wishart, big shout out to him in the cheer squad. He was going absolutely mental, trying to get a chant going. I was up on level two, trying to yell. And like, it was one of those moments where no one's going with us and you just kind of, you have to give up because if you do a couple of, you know, Carlton's and your fourth one in and there's dead silence, you can't sort of just keep going with it. So I think that's where my frustration led in that moment. So maybe I've emphasized it a bit much, but maybe we're just expecting it to happen that we didn't need to be that voice. And it was only when we start to kick the goals that now we're in the game. Now we got that moment. So I just want us to be that team that, when things maybe aren't going our way, even if we're frustrated with the game because that Richmond contest was so frustrating, we forget about that, put that aside, and use our voice to lift the boys. It clearly makes a difference. It's been spoken about so much in how, I guess, much of an impact the boys feel it out there when we are behind them. I mean, Sayers chucked it in one of the emails to the members talking about you know, the competitive advantage that us fans have full voice. I want us to do it again. And if North come out to start firing a little bit and we are sluggish off the bye, let's get up and about. Let's bring the voice, cheer the boys on. Let's not wait for them to do it. Let's do our job as a crowd and get up and about for them. Whether they show it or not, that's up to them. We can control what we can control. So bring your voice is what I'll say.
I like it. I don't want to draw too much of a similarity to this next comment. And I don't know, and not that we want to be anything like this team at all or their supporters, but I was at the Collingwood Saints game last week to get my footy fixed without Carlton playing. And Collingwood were down by like six goals or something late and they kicked a goal and the crowd is doing the Collingwood chant. And in the moment, I'm like, oh my God, that is so cringe. Like, this game is over. Like they're not going to be coming. But now that I think about it on reflection, it's kind of like the fans, even at this stage, were like trying to kind of have their stamp on the game. And, you know, is that something that could, you know, tense up St Kilda? Is that something that could give that G up? Like, believing in the players that, you know, Collingwood have shown that they can pretty much come back from anywhere. So, I don't know. There's maybe a bit of a difference there between the clubs, but I'm with what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the only thing that I am slightly envious of Collingwood, that they do have something that it can, it feels like at the ground, it can turn the momentum, even if it has zero effect. When you're the opposition, it is intimidating, and maybe that's our next level. What's our next big chance? And I don't know what it is. Maybe there's something, and I'm just throwing this out there, as someone better than me to do, but you know how we've got the sort of Seven Nation Army to start our games at home games? Is there some lyric that we can yell in that becomes our big thing? Because the tune of that's so amazing. And obviously me saying it means it'll not happen because it needs to be organic. It needs to be something that happens in the moment. But like, you know, I don't know. And here come the baggers. Something like that. All of a sudden that starts echoing around the ground. We've got our own thing. I don't know. There's something in that, and I hope someone can get that going. So I don't know. Cheer squad, if anyone's listening and you're good at your chance, you can come up with something and get enough people around it when we need to. I reckon it'll absolutely go off. But yeah, very exciting. But let's jump into team selection, Lockie. We spoke about the players that are available to come in. Interested to hear who of those you are selecting, who you aren't, and why. So what are your team changes this week?
Do you want to kick us off? I feel like you're going to go bang with yours and then I can just fold mine in.
Okay. Come on. If you want me to go first, I'm more than happy to.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So my obvious one is, I think Wiedering comes in for Lewis Young. He's been super serviceable. last week you kind of saw the limitations of someone like him. Wiedering comes in, McGovern's been exceptional, Kemp's better as that third. Simple. Next one is really just, Motlop. I think he has to come in. Small forwards have been a little disappointing to start the season. Tough question is who comes out? Is it Fantasia? Is it always? I haven't seen a lot from either to start the year. I'd be interested to know how they believe Fantasia's body is going. Gets the week off, which in my opinion, gives him that refresh that he needs to start. So I'm canning always this week. Probably off, I reckon in that Brisbane game, I saw more out of Fantasia and a bit of the build-up play than I saw of always in both contests. Thought he was a little bit more involved. But it's a tight one. So Motlop in for always. I've mentioned that I'm going Pitanet in for Kennedy. If he's not in the midfield, I don't love him in that forward line. We've tried it so many times now. It's never worked for me. I don't like us pulling that lever. I don't want us to ever do it again. I think we can get more creative if I'm being critical of the coaching and the selection panel at Carlton. So bring Pitt in. Maybe that'll help the midfield out a bit more, get us back to that, you know, center clearance dominance. Be interested to know our clearance differential in games that it's just been TDK and games that it's been both him and Pitt. I know it's small sample size, but it would be interesting to delve into that. But it's more as well just to give De Koning that opportunity to go forward with Mackay and Kerno to really dominate and get that extra bit of height down there to exploit a weakness. And my final change, little controversial. I would love to get this guy into the actual starting 22. I've got him starting as the sub. It is Elijah Hollins making his Carlton debut. Unfortunately, as the sub for Corey Durden, I just think you mentioned it in our last episode, what that sub can do, the versatility. When I'm looking at who else that could be if I am bringing Hollins into the lineup, I don't love it. And whose spot is he kind of taking? Is it his brothers? Is it Cunningham, Fogarty, Cottrell?
Yeah.
Only one I'd maybe want to remove from that is Cottrell. But he's playing that hard role, high half forward, where you can just have games you're not involved.
Mm-hmm.
Benefit of the doubt to the guys who have been there in two wins. So Hollins is as the sub. Keen to get your thoughts on that and know your changes this week.
I have no big issues with any of that. Like, your logic, I think, is very sound. Well done on a good argument, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all really good. I would, I'm now trying to go back to what those arguments actually were. Motlop is the one for me that I'm not sold on coming straight back in. I mean, similar to your question about, well, we don't know what they're thinking about Fantasia's body. I'm kind of the same with Motlop. Like, I'd love to see him a game in the VFL or something. Like we always say, like, just tear it up so I know that you're good to go. I'm just still so unclear on where I see this hierarchy of small forwards. Mm. So I think the young for Wiedering one is the no-brainer. I want to see Elijah Hollins in the team too. But for me, it would be Durden coming out, move Fantasia across to the sub for mine, and give Elijah a full game. I think it goes a little bit against the kind of point that I made around using small forwards as sub. But I think Fantasia is a different kind of sub to me. Mm. I could see him having a really impactful fourth quarter for him to come on and play up high and kick those first few Carlton snags. So for me, it would be Wiedering and Elijah Hollins as just the two to come in. But I have no issue with your pitch out. Kennedy is also one where I'm like, you could definitely talk me into giving Motlop a shot and dropping Kennedy, for example. Mm. It's just... yeah, it's not my favorite. Not my favorite move.
A forward line's probably that clear improvement area. We've spoken on it for multiple seasons now as we evolve as a team. And clearly you've got the two key pillars there. It's what is around them. I think Fogarty's really locked himself in as a walk-up starter with just his pressure. And he's added some goals, which has been really promising. It's been his only knock, really. I think he makes everyone better for being in the team. Cunningham's link-up play has been vital at times. Little inconsistent, but that's kind of the role. Yep. Yeah, those small forwards is that interesting part, and where Cottrell fits into that, where Hollands fits into this. Probably my favorite thing on this week, and now that we're starting to get these players back, is they're great selection headaches. I am not necessarily 100%. My opinion on the team this week is what it has to be. I can so easily be convinced on something else. Really, only, apart from the Wiedering selection, the only thing I'm quite bullish on to try this week is really Pitanet for the, what are we doing with this other medium-sized forward role? We haven't tried anything else. It's not working. If you maybe want to just bring in Hollands and have more pace around the fall of the ball, go for it.
Sure.
I don't know if anyone can answer this question, but I just don't see what Kennedy is bringing, trying to play more of that marking forward role. I don't think he's got the forward craft for it. He hasn't been involved as much. And I don't think that helps his game. Does that help his confidence? He's not getting around the ball as much. I don't know. Maybe they find that it's better for the midfield rotations without a Walsh.
Yep.
I just feel like we can get that elsewhere, and maybe that is an Elijah Hollands over him, but it's going to be interesting. I'm really keen to know what the listeners think and what their team changes are. So drop them in the comments over at YouTube. Head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner, because the selection's been almost really easy the first 2 weeks, and now it's just spattering the works. It could be anything. It's exciting. I can't wait for this to be every single week.
Yeah, and you're happy with Kemp over Marchbank?
Yeah, I need, with Marchbank's body, I would need to see him play some sort of football. And while we've been kind of arguing this back and forth all preseason, I see Marchbank ahead of Kemp. You see Kemp ahead of Marchbank right now. It's that thing we spoke of last season. If you're already in the team and performing, you can't just come out for someone that's so similar in that hierarchy. It's not like if Lewis Young was playing amazing football, you'd still bring in Wiedering because the gap is so large. Whereas I find those guys so similar. So Kempy's played well, he stays in.
I like it. 22 Absolutely. Years old, Kemp, as well. So it's,
No, he's been good. Yeah. So really, there is two more questions before we wrap up this episode. Talking about this game, very holistic, big things. Firstly, we've spoken on the midfield, the stoppage, the clearances that we haven't been amazing at. How do we get back to our clearance dominance? Do you have any players you want to see have a bit more midfield time? Do you want to see Pitanet in there for that reason? Do you have any ideas or things you'd maybe like to see them at least change if it isn't working once again? It's a tough question. I'm not expecting you to have the answer. Otherwise, you'd be in the coach's box. Obviously, I don't have it either, but I always love it as an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I think your pitch shout is probably as good as any. I think, you know, you and I kind of debated a bit last week, TDK and his role and how he's going. And I sometimes question how important the hit out itself is to a clearance.
So it would be a good,
yeah, exactly. So it would be an interesting bit of data for us to see, you know, if Pitt, you know, takes Cherry to the cleaner in the hit out department, what that does to our clearances. You know, you called it out earlier about like the North mids, like LDU, like, and the role that he could have. So that, I mean, that's kind of one of the worries for me, I guess, is if, North are dominant in the clearance category, that could be an avenue to us losing this one. I'm hoping that you ask this question because you have some incredibly creative suggestion that you're sitting on.
Absolutely not. Do not put me in the hot seat that much. The absolute whiz. Really, it was that Pitanet experiment and seeing if that did anything.
You're talking me into that.
I think we just need those players to step up, and maybe that is a Chera back to his best as well. Be curious if maybe we find, you know, Elijah Hollands comes in and plays a few, you know, CBAs, and that's another element. But I don't know. Maybe it's just confidence. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I like if you're taking that glass half full perspective that we always do on the Navy Blue Corner.
We do.
The best thing about this is when things haven't gone our way in the clearances, we seem to have evolved and found another way to score. Now's the best time in the year to learn that.
True.
So you're probably not going to have every facet of your game firing at 100%. For us to have a few new elements going really well, we're going to slowly work on this and find the way to do it. I really hope we don't go the opposite way, where it's like the clearance is amazing, but the transition turns poorly. Like it's like this seesaw thing where you put too much in one basket and it counterbalances the other, hoping it just slowly fixes itself. But it is a really interesting thing on what is that thing that fixes it. But the final question I did want to ask before we wrap this episode up is talking a bit more about our opposition in North Melbourne, or maybe this is still talking about us. What do you believe is the biggest obstacle to overcome that will lead to a Carlton victory this week?
Oh, wow. I mean, like I kind of said from the top, I feel like the sluggish start is a big thing for us in this, like with what we've seen from North over the first couple of weeks. If they're on top, you know, at halftime, for example, like that's the kind of thing that would worry me. I feel like if we have the game in our control at that stage, I'll feel incredible going into the second half. So please do not let that happen so that we can breathe easy.
Yeah, no, mine's really similar. It's kind of dumb, but it's like just control the football in the sense that North are going to come out of the gates red hot. They want to move the ball fast, and they're probably thinking the way to beat Carlton right now is to just that helter-skelter football. You probably saw in the first half against Freo, just real run and gun, got some fast players, got some strong guys in the contest. If you get the ball in quick enough to a guy like Larky, he's going to clunk a few. He's going to get shots in front of goal. That then gets the tails up, as you're saying. They start to get excited, a young team, that's going to drive them. So we're able to just quell things early. If they do get a bit of a run at stages, just do what we did, you know, to turn the tide against a Brisbane. Just get your hands on the footy, slow the game down. We know we can move the ball better than they can. We've got better users. Our transition's been amazing so far. So just don't really, let them get a hold at any time during the game, and I think we'll be absolutely fine. I'm really excited to see what we do at the selection table, and then what we see come this Friday. It's going to be massive. Good Friday. It's a great cause as well. So obviously if you can donate to the Good Friday appeal, I believe the cheer squad again will be doing a big raffle with proceeds going to that. So jump on board. I'll make sure to have links in that in the description, in the show notes, if you can, obviously.
Awesome.
It'd be amazing. It's a great cause. But that is going to really wrap this episode up. It's been maybe a bit of a shorter one than normal, but maybe we've just talked for long enough that it goes long anyway. But I'm excited to be here next week talking about a massive, massive win where there's no problems at all. It's all rosy. Walshy will be coming into a fit and firing Carlton. Up the bloody baggers. See you guys next time.